Starting recording and minimizing the record screen, and hopefully it's working. Oh, there are handouts. Okay, so it's time to acknowledge that SL3 is not going to work this year. I mean, it will work for sure, but not now. I'm actually, you know, proud of the simplifications made to G1, though unproud of some things that you will see later today, or not sufficiently proud of some things that you'll see later today. But SL3, I mean, is still a few months away. So, okay. So what I'm going to do now is I'm going to do G1. I'm going to sketch what remains of G1 and show you the program that actually works, and it's also on your handout, and then we'll switch to Gentle. And you know, it occurred to me that I should have called it Beauty and the Beast rather than Brute and Gentle. But so we should switch to Beauty for the remaining of the semester, unless I'll have something to add. But the idea will be to at least come to the point where it's clear where this all came from. Okay? So let me go back to G1 and the Brute G1 and where we were. So first of all, just to remind you, so we had the main GK lemma, or in fact, again, this is true for every K, not just for G1, not just for epsilon squared equal to zero. And that's, by the way, something that I didn't know in the beginning of the semester, or maybe I knew something like that existed, but I didn't have the formulas. Okay? So basically, in G epsilon, which is the same as G0, but with one additional extra term, you have the following ordering rules. So to order an LE or an FL to ELF order, you do the same as you did for G0. And to order an FE to ELF order, oops, that's a mistake. There should be an L there as well. Right? It should be ELF. So to order an FE into ELF order, you do as before, but then you multiply by an additional polynomial, or actually it's a power series in epsilon with coefficients that are polynomials in all the other variables, and we know it explicitly, and that's the replacement of the FE ordering rule. Now, we didn't do it, but if you look into the actual definition of lambda k, you can bound its degree. So the piece of degree k in epsilon, the coefficient is a polynomial in epsilon square root of L F alpha and beta with degree at most 4k. And in fact, that's the wrong way to look at it, because the logarithm of lambda k, which again you can express as a power series, it comes out to be of degree 2k plus 2, which is even better. The fact that it's of bounded degree means relatively quick computation time. That's the point of this bound. But this is still not good enough. We still don't know actually how to compute an invariant, and the reason is because when you swap an F across an E, so you have an exponential, and in it you swap an F across an E, the result is no longer an exponential. It's an exponential times a polynomial. So we need to know how to reorder things which are exponentials times polynomials. But in fact, we already know how to do that, because the moment you know how to reorder exponential, we have the same old trick as always, which is to differentiate the exponential to get polynomial prefactors. So hence comes the main GK theorem, and this is the raw version, because later there will be some change of variables that will make it much more efficient. Okay? Anyway, the raw theorem, the raw version says that I'll skip all the words, but go straight to the content. So there are some values for the r plus minus and also for n plus minus, and I will explain what that is later on. And so these are just the values of the crossing, and in fact, maybe I'll just say what n is. N is the value of the thing that looks like n, but I never mentioned that it needs a value, so I'll mention it later. Okay? There are the three parts of how to commute an L across an E, an F across an L, and an F across an E. And the three parts are basically dilemma written above with room for an additional polynomial so that it's closed under induction, under composition. So basically, if you want to swap a polynomial in L and E from the order multiplied by an exponential, from the order LE to the order EL, first of all, you write this polynomial, you replace this polynomial by, so L gets replaced by D to D gamma, and E gets replaced by D to D beta, because, well, when you differentiate an exponential, that becomes the polynomial. And then, well, you pull the differential operator out of the ordering symbol, you reorder, you get this formula, you push it back in, and you got the desired formula. So it's really trivial. Basically, any polynomial on the left-hand side becomes a differential operator on the right-hand side. Now, you might think it's complicated. It isn't, because this polynomial will be of bounded degree. So, the polynomial P starts as a lambda. Lambda has, well, if k is equal to 1, lambda has degree 4. Basically you can check that the degree will never increase beyond 4. I mean, you differentiate, well, you just check it. So that's it. So that's the, that works. The thing that's missing is the values of r plus minus and n plus minus, and the explanation of what n plus minus is. So let's quickly go through it. So first of all, implementation. So, if you remember last time, I've implemented differential polynomials, so substituting a polynomial into substituting derivations into a polynomial. Back then it was in order to find lambda. Okay? But now I need it again for the second part, for another trick. So it's re-implemented here. Then there is the short implementation of lambda. I could have taken the long, but why not take the short? And again, DP appears, differential polynomials appear in it. Then, since I'm only aiming to do k equals 1, I declare that epsilon has the property that epsilon to the power p, if p is greater than 1, is equal to 0. So from this point on, we are at k equals 1. Now, if you don't believe me, let's compute it. So let's compute, let's make a table of epsilon to the power j, where j runs from 0 to 7, and see what the computer will think it is. And okay, here you go. So, okay, then the next thing is, okay, now I actually begin with the implementation. So I need a container for Omega, okay, I need a container for our formulas. So the value of the invariant is always omega e to the l plus q 1 plus epsilon p. So omega e to the l plus q is like before, and 1 plus epsilon p is the new stuff. P is a polynomial of degree at most 4 in God knows how many variables. But not too many. Sorry. And so I hereby declare that within Mathematica I will call such I will name this form, this thing, E1n of omega L Q and P. So what's E1n, or why E1n? So E1 because it's okay, E because it stands for an exponential. This is sort of the primary thing here, is an exponential. So it's a perturbed exponential with a coefficient, a scalar coefficient. So this is the E. The 1 is because K is equal to N, to 1, and N because this is naive. And later there should be a P version, which stands for polished. Okay? So anyway, and now I start defining properties of E1n. So first of all, if you want to bring an E1n to canonical form, you apply together to each of its components. So you just replace each part by together applied to it. Together is the Mathematica reasonably efficient way, but not terribly efficient, simplify rational functions. Okay, so since the coefficients are always rational functions, then I simplify them using together. Then I tell the computer how to multiply two E1's n's, right? This will be necessary if I multiply two crossings. Then the product of two E1n's is you multiply the omegas, because these are the prefactors. Then these are, you know, maybe I should write what E1n is so as to remember. So E1n of omega L Q and P is omega e to the L plus Q 1 plus epsilon P. So when you multiply two such things, the omega multiplied, the L and the Q add, and the P's also add. Because you multiply 1 plus epsilon P by another 1 plus epsilon, basically because 1 plus epsilon P1 times 1 plus epsilon P2 is equal to 1 plus epsilon P1 plus P2, because we've dropped the epsilon squared terms. And that might be a bit more complicated later on. Then I tell the computer how to compare two such things. You just compare each factor and simplify the result. And okay. Then I tell the computer what are the values of the crossings, but I don't really know yet what the values of the crossings are. So I'm putting the values I know from G0, and the P part, I'm just leaving it as indeterminate at the moment. Okay? I'm not exactly sure why I made a demo of how you do it, but here's how you do it in practice. I mean, here's what you get when you do a three, multiply the things corresponding to the trefoil. And come to think of it, even in the demo, I should have made it more realistic, and make it made. I should have made it E1, J. So, not. I shouldn't have pretended that it's a global constant. It at least depends on the strands. So, but anyway. So P. Wait, what am I doing? Ah, sorry. So, no, what am I doing? Yeah, okay, plus. Now, this one should be IJ and. No, and. Sorry. Ah, I keep hitting the wrong key. Okay, so now if I rerun it, then I will not get three times the unknown, but at least sort of the unknown placed in the right place. Not that it really matters, because it's still unknown. Anyway, then I have to implement the swaps. So this is the F or E across an L swap. And it's the same as we did for G0, except with an additional term, which is, so the P term becomes, you take the old P, sorry, you take P, you replace it by differentiation, apply to E to the Q, to the E to the, basically to the exponential, and multiply by the negative exponential to keep just the polynomial part. So and then likewise for swapping an F across an E. So again, it's exactly the same as G0. Q here is the exponent of the exponential. So it's the same as G0, except you add the differential operator acting you add P turned into a differential operator acting on E to the Q and multiplied by E to the minus Q, and you add the lambda term. And so everything is exactly the same, and so it's really and it's really simple. I mean, if you think about it, at the end of the day, this is the full size of the program. So 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 4, 7, 8, 9, I don't know, like 15, 20 lines of code. It's not really not a big deal. Anyway, and now I need to test things. So let's test that everything runs. So first of all, this is just an aside. So I wanted to see inside lambda 1, so maybe I should remind you what is lambda. So here is lambda, and let's print it. So it's a pretty big thing, okay? So I just wanted to verify that it really is just a polynomial, I mean, with in the right variables. So I had the computer print its coefficient. It's basically, I wanted to see what it is as a polynomial of epsilon, E, and L, and F. So I asked the computer to find the coefficient rule of this polynomial with respect to epsilon, E, L, and F, and the computer tells me that the coefficient of epsilon to the 1, E to the 2, L to the 0, F to the 2 is equal to this ugly thing, which is a scalar, if you look at it. It's a rational function in H, and, well, delta is also a scalar. So basically, it's a scalar. And then I wanted to know what are all the powers that appear. So I just did take the coefficient, all of these coefficients, and wherever you see a going to C, replace it by epsilon E L F to the power P with head time, so just multiply all of these things, so multiply all of these things and ignore the coefficient. So this is sort of the reduced polynomial, the polynomial where all scalars were converted to one. So now I know what might occur in lambda. So indeed you can see that it's at most of degree 4. Here is the worst term. Okay, everything else is even less. Okay, so now I wanted to test meta-associativity. So I let zeta be a completely general thing. So omega is left as a symbol. L is the most general thing you can find in degree 4, I mean with 4 on 4 strands. Q is the most general thing you can write on 4 strands. And for P, I was lazy. Really, I should have written the most general thing you can write with Z's potential powers. Since I was lazy, I just made it as a constant plus something linear in L, E, and F. So in principle, the tests I'm running are insufficient. Okay. This said, I was lazy and that's all I did. So here is zeta. And now I can compute stitching 1 to 2 inside zeta, but I print it only short printing up to length, up to sort of 5 lines, and the result after 3 seconds is this ugly mess. Okay? And then in principle, I should check the left hand side of meta associativity, the only problem is that it takes a really, really, really long time. So I could hit enter and wait until it will finish. Since it takes, this is the right hand side. I should have done it for the left hand side first. But anyway, it takes 5 minutes or so for each side. So it's a long time. And I didn't want to, so I left it on the screen, okay? So not in real time, left-hand side comes out equal to right-hand side, okay? Now, so hence we have meta-associativity and I just aborted the computation, okay? Okay, why is it taking so long? It's supposed to take polynomial time. So why is it taking so long? So basically because, because of two reasons. One reason is that I'm actually not yet in the version in which this is polynomial time, namely, to make it polynomial times, I needed to have the ring of scalars grow relatively slowly. And right now, my scalars are rational functions in the HIs and their exponentials. So if we're on 8 strands, on 4 strands, then it's rational functions in 8 variables, and that's a huge space. Now, on the other hand, this is just these are just the scalars. Now, at the end of the day, when I put everything inside a single universal enveloping algebra, I'm going to identify all the H's and all the E to the H's. So I may as well identify them at the beginning and drop down to rational functions in 2 variables, but I didn't even bother to do it here. So I'm verifying something stronger than I need to get a knot invariant. If I want a tangle invariant, this is what I need. Okay, or more precisely, if I want the strongest invariant I can get, this is what I need. I can always mod out by identifying all the H's with each other and all the e to the H's with each other, but then I'll get something slightly weaker than what I can. Anyway, so that's one reason why it's low, because I'm doing something too strong. And the other reason why it's low is because Mathematica is extremely inefficient in the management of rational functions. Especially, you know, when the variables are H's and e to the H's, it tries so basically, if you have a rational function, you need to factor the numerator and factor the denominator to see if there are common terms so that you can cancel them. And Mathematica does it, well, either inefficiently or the issue is hard, okay? But you'll see in a minute that this is not necessarily, not necessary, okay? Anyway, I wanted to make one comment before telling you how to make it more efficient. And the comment is that, so I actually don't fully understand what is going on. So let me say it this way. So, okay, so you test meta-associativity. So, you test meta-associativity. And if you make a mistake in what lambda is, it doesn't work. Okay? And that's, believe me, well, I didn't check it here, but believe me, I checked it by making many, many mistakes many, many times. Okay? But on the other hand, it's very clear if you look at the formulas that if you take our lambda and multiply it by any scalar, the result is still meta-associative. Okay? So you could ask yourself, okay, why not multiply it by the scalar zero? Okay? And in fact, if you take the if you take the scalar zero, the result is meta-associative. And in fact, it's the you get the G0 invariant. Or you get the G0 formulas, okay? But then you can ask, okay, could it be that, could it be that you can simply, that you can take lambda to be zero in this program, but then find alternative values for the crossings, so with P, with P plus and P minus that are not zero. And if you did that, you might actually get yet another invariant, or a different strong invariant. Okay, so for G0 is like taking lambda equals to zero and the P's to be equal to zero. P plus and P minus. But could it be that you can take lambda to be zero and non-trivial p's? And my expectation is that the answer is no, but I don't know it. I mean, I only know that how should I say that? The reason I know everything should work is because it comes from G1, which in itself comes from SL2, where everything works. Or alternatively, it comes from G1, which also comes from this expansion business that I was talking about in the gentle part, where everything works. And the moment I decide to work with G1, lambda is forced on me, and so are p plus and p minus. Or rather, not, they're not forced, but I know that they exist. But that's a transcendental understanding. That's an understanding of, well, so at the end of the day, the program is a simple-minded program that manipulates polynomials or rational functions or pairs of polynomials. There should be an understanding at that level, without having to appeal to Lie algebras or even worse, I mean diagrams and all that, expansions and all that. But I don't have this understanding. So I'm somewhat unhappy. Maybe I'll just move on. Okay. So the next thing is, I wanted to understand why is the program so slow. Well, I already told you my understanding, but I want to understand a little better. So let me load into Mathematica a package that I wrote a long time ago called profile.m, and really long time ago, I wrote it in 1994, and then modified it a bit, like including this month, but it's really old, and it's a profiler for Mathematica. I don't know if you've seen profiling in other computer languages, but that is the same. So what's a profiler? So one way to see it is within a program, you declare a number of subroutines that get or procedures that get profiled, and then the profiler will tell you how much time gets spent inside each one. Okay? And then you kind of know where time is spent. When you run something and it takes 5 minutes, you know where the 5 minutes are spent. So basically I took the old, I needed to take the old program, which is same as above. So I just copy pasted part of it down and added a profiling point around canonical form called CF. So this is a profiling point called CF. This is a profiling point called normal order X with L, and this is a profiling point called normal order F with E. And then might there be another one that I'm forgetting? I don't know. But then I tell the computer, well, I enter this and I tell the computer to rerun everything within the profiler and then print the resulting profile. And here is the resulting profile. Canonical form was called 8 times. This is in order to compute meta-associativity. It was called eight times, and the time spent inside it is 273 seconds. Okay? Its parents, so it was called by, normal ordering of FE, by normal ordering of XL 4 times, and by the root, namely not by another program, twice. And then the time spent within each of the time spent under each of these is given. So actually all of the details of sort of the execution profile are not terribly interesting. The most interesting bit is the fact that canonical form has 273 seconds spent in it, whereas the next worst bit has 11 seconds spent on it. So basically, the vast majority of time is spent within canonical form. Okay? So, okay, so the moral is, the trouble really is with simplifying rational functions, bringing rational functions to canonical form, which is silly. That's not where we should be spending time. So, you know, did I tell you that today is mostly to acknowledge defeat? So this is one place where I sort of got defeated. So you look at the results. You actually look at the results, and you find that Q is always of the form Q prime divided by omega, where Q prime has polynomial coefficients instead of rational function coefficients. Likewise, P is always of the form P prime divided by omega to the fourth, the way I wrote it, where P prime again has polynomial coefficients. Furthermore, again, to me, it's essentially by experiment, though there might be some theory behind it, but I don't understand it. But anyway, by experiment, you find also that if you make the change of variable EI goes to TI minus 1 over HI times EI, so EI goes to E to the HI minus 1 over HI times EI, so if you make this change of variables throughout, then HI disappears, and you're left only with E to the TI. So you're with E to the HI. So you basically can, so by doing this, you can reduce to polynomials in just the TIs. So the next thing is to do it, and I wrote a few lines of code to do this reduction. So basically, I'm not sure I'm even saying it right. Okay. So basically, okay, let me say it differently. All of this I did half a year ago. So at the time I didn't have good formulas for lambda, various other things weren't so smooth, but these observations were half a year ago. And at the time, I spent some time actually carrying out all of these changes of variables, and ended up replacing the program written here with a program that looks exactly the same, except with all variables replaced. So I mean, it's almost indistinguishable, but all the variables are replaced. I spent a few well, I actually spent quite a long time trying to redo it and failed. So it's sort of embarrassing, but I'm missing something somewhere. There was also a renormalization of epsilon. There was sort of basically by renaming all the variables, I could reduce the expressions to much simpler ones. But I failed to recover the precise change of variables, and I failed to make it systematic. So I mean, down below is my experimentation from the last few days, but at the end it fails. So I'll spare you that, and just tell you what the result is. And the silly thing is that the result I knew long before. So here is the polished G1 invariant, and basically here is lambda again, but now it's written. So again, everything looks exactly the same, except this is after the change of variables. So instead of H's, you have T's everywhere, and right, T being E to the H. And the formulas are slightly different, but are of exactly the same spirit. So it's kind of embarrassing, and and the program is exactly okay. The program isn't any harder, and well, and furthermore, in this language, here are the actual values of R plus and R minus. Well, found either by brute force or by appeal to quantum groups, and I neither one I can reproduce easily. Anyway, maybe I'll just sort of go to the bottom line and tell you that at the end of the day, you actually get a running program in these new variables. So here is a complete evaluation for the trefoil knot. Here is a complete evaluation for 8.17. So this is a knot with eight crossings, and it takes, what, 6-7 seconds? Let's wait for it to finish. 9 seconds. That's because another evaluation is running in the background and the video. And then here is a 36 crossing knot. So it takes 860 seconds. Maybe I will not run it right now, but that's the full output. What do I owe you? Oh, and I. So. Well, it's kind of ridiculous that I'm stuck on a change of variable at the end of the day, but that's where I'm stuck. I should have added. Let me stop the recording for now and change it to a discussion.